Hey everybody, welcome back to Small Talk Japan. On this podcast, we talk about all things Japan in English. This is actually a kind of a rare episode. We usually do a deep dive into the Japanese news, but today I have two special guests. You guys are from the podcast
Unpacking Japan.
Unpacking Japan, formerly known as
Fish and Rice. So it's from Japan.
And then now it is Unpacking Japan.
Correct. Welcome. Thank you for having us.
Welcome, welcome. So first, start off with you guys' self-introduction. So Toby, let's start with you.
So I'm Toby, been in Japan since 2018 and currently working for a company called Zen Group in Osaka. Mm-hmm. And this is where we started the podcast
about nearly
1 year ago.
Yeah, in March. It will be 1 year, March?
Yeah, March will be 1 year.
Yeah, and I was just on it a couple of months ago.
And it was not Unpacking Japan, it was still...
Fish and Rice.
Yes.
Yeah. But you guys told me, it's like, the name is going to change.
That was already decided.
Yeah.
But the change of name has been done very well, and we've got a very nice new logo. And
at the beginning, I thought, Unpacking Japan, that's kind of shit. And then now it's like grown on me. It's a good name.
And today we're unpacking Kagoshima. Right?
Yeah, you guys came all the way from Osaka to come here. Audrey, can you give us a self-introduction as well?
Yeah, we work together on the podcast, but I also do video and camera work for Zen Group, for the same company, for a little bit more than a year, a year and a half. I've been in Japan for more than 6 years. I've been teaching English before.
Yeah.
I know that you've been teaching English before, and you still kind of do.
I own a school that teaches English. How about that?
Yeah. So, and now I'm doing camera work.
Can you guys first tell? So, usually when we talk about foreigners who are working in Japan, aside from Alex, who comes on the show with sometimes when he has time, most of the people that we have on the show, they're like English teachers. Like, that's like the kind of experience that you guys get. Mm-hmm. But you guys work for Zen Group. So can you please tell me first, what does Zen Group do, and how did you guys become a part of it?
So Zen Group actually used to be called Zen Market.
Okay.
And that's how the company started nearly 10 years ago. And put simply, it's an e-commerce company, cross-border e-commerce company. So the idea is to help export Japanese products overseas.
Okay.
And the company does this in different ways. And Zen Market is still today the main one. Mm-hmm. And basically it operates as a proxy buying service. So let's say you live overseas back in California, I think, where you're from.
Vegas, but close enough.
Vegas,
basically the same thing.
And so you're back in Vegas and you want to order something from a Japanese website. You can't do it directly because of needing a Japanese address, for example, and such. And you can do it through us. So we'll help you to purchase whatever product you want from whatever website in Japan.
So what kind of products do you guys... I mean, like, you're not selling. You're kind of like the middleman. But like, what kind of products are people buying through your service?
So this is super interesting because it really depends on the country.
Okay.
So what makes Zen Group special is that they really focused on trying to give access to the service to countries all over the world.
Okay.
So we have our website in many, many different language versions. I think right now we have 20. So you can access it from Thailand, in Thai, from Indonesia, in Indonesian. You can do it in Spanish, whatever you want.
Wow.
And so in all of those countries, what people are looking for is super different.
So can you give me some examples?
In France, for example.
Okay, in France, where you're from.
I grew up in France, correct. Anime products are still very, very popular.
Okay, anime products, okay.
Anime products of all kinds, figures especially. Retro consoles are like taking off
I have so many retro consoles in my house. I love living in Japan. Like all the otaku keep things so nice. Mm-hmm. So when you buy things used, it's just so nice. I love it.
Yeah. Well, buying things used from Japan is precisely what people are looking for because Japan has such a reputation of preserving the quality of their used goods.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so if you go like on Mercari, which is this kind of secondhand
it's like eBay
platform,
yeah,
you find so many treasures.
So I was just talking about this on the podcast the other day. I bought my VP for my school. She opened her own cafe bar on the side. And I bought her a 1997 iMac. Mm-hmm. And it works.
1997.
So it's the first generation iMac. And it's like sitting in her bar now as like a centerpiece, as like a little piece of, I don't know, like furniture or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool. And it works. Well, the speakers don't work, but whatever.
But you found this in Japan.
I found it on Mercari.
Mercari.
And when they shipped it to me, they shipped it to me in like the most carefully like packaged way.
Mm-hmm.
I just love this about this country. And then 2 years ago, I bought a G5 and it came in its original box. Like, it's just like unbelievable this stuff just exists somewhere in this country, preserved.
preserved in pristine condition.
Yeah, pristine condition.
There's a lot of stuff that is sold on Zen Market is actually these like vintage products or old products. Mm-hmm. About 70%.
The majority is secondhand products. Yeah. A lot of, for example, secondhand luxury bags. But then what's interesting as well is in some countries you will see an interest for example, in countries in Southeast Asia. They do have a lot of Japanese cars, but they don't necessarily have the car parts the repair.
Yeah.
So you see that they buy these kind of parts. In some countries in Eastern Europe, there's a strong affinity for fishing, and a lot of Japanese fishing companies like Shimano, for example, produce quality fishing gear
that
is not necessarily always available overseas and that people can then access for us. So it's very interesting to see, depending on the culture and the country, what people are buying and also how they're using the service and how they're interacting. And that's super interesting.
So now wait, so that's Zen Market. So that's
that's one service.
So that's like the biggest part of the company.
Correct.
Now your guys' podcast was renamed Unpacking Japan because you guys launched a new product, newish product, and it's about a box, right?
So we do have a box service right now, but the reason the name was changed to Unpacking Japan was also because as a service that basically packs and ships products from Japan overseas, Unpacking Japan was kind of like the little play on this time. Unpack the box and we can
change. So these Japanese sellers, then what they do is they list the product on your website?
So this they can do on another of our service, which is called Zen Plus.
Okay.
So Zen Market basically just gives you as a user the possibility to just buy from the websites directly, like Amazon Japan or Mercado.
I see.
And then on Zen Plus, you have sellers. Like let's say we just walked past a Shoten guy and the shop owner there wants to expand his sales overseas because maybe he doesn't have enough foot traffic.
Maybe because the yen is really cheap right now and people want to buy, you know, goods on from Japan.
So he could open his store on Zen Plus and basically we would help promote it and we would basically give access to foreign customers to this to his products.
So
and he wouldn't have to deal with international logistics. He could just ship it to our warehouses in Osaka.
And then you guys take care of it. I see. That's actually really clever.
Yeah.
So when I went to you guys' office, which by the way, you guys have a beautiful office, I want to say, it's in downtown Osaka. It's and it's just like you walk in and it doesn't look like a Japanese office at all.
Not at all.
People say that.
It's like Silicon Valley. And it's just crazy to see all these different country people working on one. I think it was two floors, right? Mm. And like everybody's just like, just seems super positive, and it just, you guys have like this break room that looks like a really cool restaurant, and
which we turn into this makeshift studio that everyone may think is a proper studio for a podcast.
It is a proper studio as long as you say it is.
If you don't see the ping pong table, that's right. It is
include the ping pong table. You were just saying when you entered our studio, you're like, I thought that the background, at least the shelf, was real, and I'm like, it is real.
Nothing is real.
It's totally real.
Yeah, we can nearly grab it. Nearly grab it.
It's totally real, guys. So you guys began the podcast for what reason? What was the reason for doing the podcast? Because like you're doing your job, right? And then you do camera work.
Camera editing, sound.
So what is a drop shipping or a shipping company need with this? Is this like to take pictures of products or something like that? Or?
There is product photography. Yes, for example, what Toby is doing is those boxes that you mentioned, and there are items in those boxes. So I have to take those photos, edit them to the best quality, maybe a little bit Photoshop.
That service is called
Zenpop.
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 Okay, and that service, can you guys describe the service?
Yeah, it's basically a subscription box service.
Okay.
So you want products from Japan and you want them as a subscription.
We're talking about edible food.
Food or stationery. Stationery is very popular as well, Japanese stationery. And we will make a curation of those products every month, pack them in our box and ship them under that brand. Yeah.
And it's a subscription base.
Exactly.
That's cool. So you get like every month you just get this little special like treat from Japan.
Exactly.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And so you take video and photos of the product that goes.
Photos of the products because every month it's different and people want to know before they buy or while they're subscribed, they want to know what's coming next month or soon this month. And those photos go on the website, they put them, people can see. I do videos like unboxing of those boxes. Sometimes we do ads. Sometimes we do just organic media about Osaka, about takoyaki food and something like that. People see those things and go to our channel, subscribe. and follow us, so they won't maybe accidentally go to the website and buy something.
So let's talk about really quick, how did you guys get into your positions? Let's start with Toby. Toby, what's your background to go into this kind of work?
So I came to Japan initially on a student visa.
Okay.
And I studied Japanese at the Japanese language school.
And this was when?
This was end of 2018.
So right before everything went bad.
Basically. So I was still in school when everything went bad.
Okay.
And my background is in hospitality. So I used to work in hotels. And okay. I was looking to continue my career in a hotel. And I had found an opportunity to work at an hotel. But then the pandemic hit. And I hadn't yet signed the contract. And the hotel was like, well, we're going to wait a little bit before we sign your contract. Because suddenly we have no customers coming in.
Yeah.
And then a couple of months later, they were like, let's wait a little bit more. And after half a year, they said, sorry, we can't give you the contract because we need to cut our costs. So then I was in a stage where I was looking for other opportunities and there was not much going on in the hospitality industry. And a few weeks, actually, was very lucky timing. Before my visa ended, the former HR manager from Zen Group reached out to me and asked me, are you interested in kind of this position to do marketing for the French market for this Zenpop project?
I see, because of your language abilities. Exactly. They were like, hey, we want to target the French market.
So our company has people from, I think, over 40 nationalities
now.
And we are always looking for people that have these linguistic skills, plus maybe marketing or customer support abilities. And so I was very lucky, fortunate at the time that they reached out to me and I got the interviews, and now I've been with the company for over 3 years already.
Yeah. That's cool.
And Andrew joined us last year, a little bit more than a year ago.
2022, yeah. September.
So what's your trajectory from going from, where did you start to get to being the camera guy?
It started with a hobby. COVID hit, it was 2020, I think, January, when everybody was home, nobody was going out, and I was thinking, like, what should I do? Because my previous hobbies were all meeting people, talking to them, playing board games, like D&D, nerdy stuff. And then suddenly there's no way of doing that. And the biggest part is meeting in person, not playing online. I mean, I can play online anytime at home. And I thought, okay, so I'm selling off all the board games that I have and I'm picking up a new hobby. And I thought, what can I do without like interacting with people and still going out into the nature? I thought I would buy a camera. I bought a camera, started going out, taking pictures.
Before that, did you have any experience with a camera?
Not really. I had like pocket camera when I was a teenager.
Kodak.
And phone. Yeah. And I had phone just taking snapshots of things and sometimes maybe beautiful landscape.
Do you remember the model of the first that camera that you bought?
Yes, definitely. All of my first models or first photos are still on my Instagram. I keep them there to be kind of hazukashi about that and remember.
Being embarrassed, like, about them?
Yes. So, but it's good. I can see what was wrong and I can learn from that and sometimes go back and see like, oh, these photos are like really not good.
But that's important to be able to look back upon your previous work and be like, you know what? I tried my best at this time, but I can now, with my knowledge, I can see all these things that were shit that I could have done better.
Definitely.
What did you start on? What was the first camera that you bought as a hobby in 2020?
What camera?
Yeah,
it was Sony. I went for full frame from the very beginning, because when I was researching, I knew that full frame is kind of quote unquote better. Many people say that maybe not, but I still think that it's a better, more professional level. And I bought 50 millimeter lens, fixed lens, not zoom. I thought it's also better, and started just going out and shooting everything I saw. Then I started working with models, and then I started shooting events. And one of the events was where my boss, current boss, our CEO, was. And I posted those photos of him and other people on Facebook, tagged them. And a few months later, he contacted me and he asked, we're looking for a camera guy. I saw your photos online. Like, maybe you want to try?
I'm
like, yeah, sure. Why not? At that time, I was teaching. And like, teaching is good. I was making some money, but I really wanted to do camera work. It was my hobby. And using your hobby or making your hobby your job is usually a dream, right?
Yeah, right.
And that was an opportunity. I'm like, yeah, sure, I'm doing that. Let's go. And I went through interviews and started doing that. Here, I'm doing mostly video.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, how did you transition? Because I subscribe to your Instagram. So I see your photos, and they're really, really good.
Thank you.
How did you transition from photo to video? Because they're not... Yeah, the cameras can be the same, but there it's a very different art style, right?
Usually in video, there is a lot more than photos. Although people who do videography, they called director of photography, which is, which was really confusing for me at first. Like, are you photographer? Why are you director of photography, DOP? But then there are many things that are very similar, and you should know photography to do videography at best. Like, the best thing that you can do is learn photography and then do videography. I think it's natural because a lot of content online is moving towards videos, mostly towards short form, and this is what company wanted me to do. And I was trying to do that before. I had my very bad YouTube channel, which
What was your very bad YouTube channel?
I started travel vlog, and then I bought camera gear, and I started unboxing, and that unboxing video took off, and I was like, whoa, this actually works. People want to watch me unboxing gear. I started doing more and more camera gear review, but then it didn't work as well as I expected, and I kind of gave up a little bit. I still went back to photography and doing like short form videos for models, and then I got noticed and hired for, to do this job, and then this work we are doing a lot of video, mostly video.
So you're just self-taught then? You just like learned all of your skills from like YouTube or something?
Basically, yes, YouTube. A lot of YouTube, a lot of like camera reviews or to learn technical skills or some like composition tips and secrets from photographers and videographers and all of that, mostly on YouTube, and then just taking camera, using it, coming back home, editing, again, listening or watching, and then again, repeat.
Yeah, just constantly, constantly getting better.
Yeah.
Tell me, what about you? Now, you didn't like go to university to become a podcast host. No. So, no, so, so why, I can see why Audrey's the camera guy, but why did you get chosen to be the host?
Why am I here?
Well, why are you here?
The truth is, initially, I floated the idea of starting a podcast for that Zen Pop project where we have those boxes with food. And I thought, oh, it could be interesting with the team if we have a podcast where we get together and we talk about all the snacks in the boxes and we try the ramen and we just talk generally about food in Japan. And maybe by doing that podcast for Zen Pop, we could build a community around it and basically self-promote our boxes. That was my original thought. And so I shared this idea with Andrew because I need someone to film this and so on. And he was like, oh, that's a great idea. And before I knew it, he already talked about that idea to our CEO. And he came back to me, he's like, yeah, I talked to the CEO and he thought, this is cool, let's do it, but let's not do it just for this project, let's make it more like a company-wide project.
Oh.
And basically, the moment we had that green light, we sat down a couple of hours later and turned on the cameras and the microphones, old clip mics, and started talking about supermarkets in Japan. And that was our first episode. And from there, we just kind of continued. And it was him and I talking for the first six episodes. And it was pretty obvious we were boring.
Very embarrassing. Don't search, don't watch.
Yeah, it's not worth
it. But it's good to have those old embarrassing videos. Yeah.
We said we would rewatch them after doing this for 1 year. So in a few weeks, probably.
Yeah. You guys should instead, you should film yourselves watching it.
Yeah, reaction video.
Do a reaction video so the two of you can talk about it.
Cringing.
Just thinking about it. But then it was like, oh, maybe you can try interviewing someone and like invite someone. And so thank you, Charlie, for being the first brave guest on a podcast. He's one of our coworkers and kind of talked about recruiting in HR in Japan, which was super interesting.
Which was actually, one of my favorite episodes of yours. Because like as a person who does recruiting and has to manage people, when he was talking, I was just like, preach it, brother.
Yes. Charlie, thank you. And so he came and that was interesting. And then we invited someone else from the company. And then, oh, I have this friend who could come, or I know this person who could come. And we had like people in our surroundings. And one of the things we set out to do when we started this podcast was like, for this to have any chance of being somewhat of success, we need to be consistent.
Mm.
So we, from the moment we recorded that first episode, we were like, okay, let's do one episode per week.
Mm-mm-mm.
So we always constantly had to look for guests and we were releasing one episode per week. And came a point where the CEOs saw that we were committed to this and to kind of build something and thought, okay, maybe if we invest a little bit of money into this project and not just time, we can have more guests, we can do more things. And with that budget, for example, we were able to invite you to come all the way from Kagoshima to Osaka to share your experience with opening Stapleton School.
Yep.
And to story, do your podcast.
Talking about Story Studios, talking about Small Talk Japan. And, you know, it was fun.
So that was super fun and super interesting. And so we've been able to, little by little, week after week, improve. I mean, Andrew's camera work improved a lot. Sound work improved a lot.
I was really impressed with the setup when I got there. I was like, it was simple, but it did exactly what it needed to do. Yeah. It was not overly complicated. You guys knew all the equipment that you guys needed. The lighting was really good. I mean, you guys moved sets from different locations that, you know, and then you finally finally settled upon where you are now.
Yeah.
Which I think where you are now is probably best. It has the really good bokeh. It's like just really nice.
It's the only place in an entire office where we can be consistent. Mm. So the interviews we did at the very beginning, facing out the window with a city view, that view, I love it. It's next to where I sit for my regular work in marketing. And that view is beautiful.
And the reason why you can't use it for a podcast is?
Well, it's right in the middle of the open office, right? So
for me, it's not the main reason. For me, it's the lighting right? And it's like exposing. Lighting.
For him, it's crazy. Editing. But for me, it's maybe for the guests, it's not comfortable to speak out loud in front of everybody. Everyone. And also for everyone working.
I love how you guys are seeing this from different angles. You're like, the lighting is impossible. You're like, the guest work
I'm
is impossible.
I'm on that side, on technical side. Yeah.
And so that wall with a world map and that says borderless, which is kind of our motto for the company, was the perfect spot or the best spot in the company.
I think you guys' podcast is just like, it's. I don't want to use the word wholesome, but it's very wholesome. And you can learn a lot of different things from different people from their perspectives in Japan. And I also really like that you guys have access to all those different people in Osaka. Because Osaka is like it's like a lot of people, you know, especially if they've never been to Japan, they know about Tokyo, they might know about Kyoto, they don't know about Kagoshima, because no one knows anything about Kagoshima.
Except when the volcano blows up.
Dude, it's great. It's fun. When I hope it erupts while you're here. Just a little one. It's fun to watch. But a lot of foreigners don't know much about Osaka, and Osaka is such a dynamic place. It's really, really, it's one of my favorite cities in all of Japan.
A lot of things are happening, yeah.
Yeah.
But you said something interesting. You said that we are lucky to have this opportunity to bring all these diverse people, and there's something for everyone, right? And when I'm a podcast listener, I listen nearly daily to various podcasts, and there are a lot of podcasts in Japan, like Small Talk Japan or some others that talk just with entrepreneurs or some that talk just with people from a specific country. There are a podcast from Jane Nakata, whom we interviewed as well. She interviews New Zealanders in Japan, which is super interesting. So you have a lot of these different podcasts, and the idea is if we could create something that centralizes a little bit, that creates this network where everyone is kind of becomes part of this community and is able to interact and kind of share experiences and kind of, all right, you know this, you do this, and like, how can we kind of connect all the dots?
You know what you guys should do, like every year, just do like a party, like of all the guests.
We've been told that already.
Really?
We need to convince our CEO, see if you can have the budget to re-invite everyone that was on a podcast for one big party.
Yeah, and just like have everybody mingle and then have, you know, somebody running around with the camera just like trying to capture moments of it. That'd be really cool. Let's give our viewers a little glimpse of the future of Unpacking Japan. Like in, let's say you guys do this. I mean, Joe Rogan, for example, has been on the air for, I don't know, 10 plus years, right? Let's say 5 years from now, where do you guys see Unpacking Japan?
5 years. Whoa. 5 years.
So that's like 4 years from now, right?
We were thinking that, or at least I was throwing this idea around and talking that this should turn for the company, because company is investing money into this and they want to see something back, right? Some return. And this could turn into some media platform that company can use. It's not just us building this, as you say, wholesome community of people talking to each other, telling their stories, which is great. But why would companies spend money on that?
Right. There's got to be like a, you know, dual use, right? You've got obviously the content is the most important thing, but what is the company getting a return on this investment for, right?
Yeah. So. At this point, we're just doing it. There is very little that company gets back. But then if it's a media platform, which is different outlets, for example, we can put out on Instagram and put out our content on other platforms and kind of spread and show that we can do it and we can talk about different things. We can invite probably guests that are important for the company or maybe promote company at some point on those platforms. And that was
bigger and bigger names.
Yeah, probably. Hopefully we can do that. But that's only plans. 5 years? I don't know if it's...
Five years is a long time.
Really long time.
All right. So let's make it smaller then. How about a year from now? What do you think a year from now?
A year from now, I think it will be great if this is a fully established project. For now, it's basically the two of us doing this with the support of the creative team of the company and some of our co-workers that help us with various tasks or that also come as guests on the show. But it's not yet a fully established project within the company. I think the idea of turning this into a media platform and establish this as a place where we can promote different people that are doing things in Japan and connect them with each other and with our companies and group, that will be wonderful. And I think 1 year from now seems to be a reasonable timeline to kind of build it into that,
because you guys are doing this podcast while doing your full-time work at the same time, right?
And but the opportunities are like endless, right? If we're able to grow and connect with more people and more people are interested in listening to the stories of people living in Japan and behind the scenes of what it's really like. You started this conversation with us about saying most people around Kagoshima work in English schools and as English teachers.
Yeah, there's no,
but there are so many opportunities in Japan.
Yeah.
And sometimes you may have this perception that, oh, if the only way to get into Japan or to start here is as an English teacher, and that's wrong. You can do so much more. And a lot of the guests that we have on the podcast, they really highlight that. And with their stories, they really show what are the key things that you really need to be successful, to establish yourself for a longer period of time. And we can start seeing common threads from interviewing so many people in 2 weeks. So next week, Saturday, which will be February 3rd.
February 3rd, okay.
We will release our episode 50. And already now we can see so much that can be learned from listening to all the stories. And imagine 5 years. If we do this once per week, 5 years from now, that's plus 250 episode ish, a bit more even. That's crazy. That's like I cannot even imagine all the things that could happen in that timeline.
The people
that we will have,
and then all the things that you learn too. That's the great thing about interview podcasts. You get to learn so much from the guests, right? All right, let's close this special episode of Small Talk. How can we find you guys? Where are you guys? You're on YouTube. Unpacking Japan.
YouTube, Unpacking Japan. Instagram, Unpacking Japan. Twitter, Unpacking Japan. TikTok as well, Unpacking Japan.
You guys have a TikTok? I didn't know
that. Yeah, but it's not that active. I think we focus mostly on YouTube and Instagram for short form content, and then on Twitter to kind of communicate with a little bit of the community that is out there. A lot of foreigners on Twitter, very active.
Yeah, Twitter is also huge in Japan too.
Yeah, it is really big. Very interesting place.
All right, we'll provide links for all of their accounts in the video description. Thank you guys so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Now let's go eat and get drunk.
Oh, yeah.
All right, everybody. That's
famous
been our
last words.
That's been our special episode. We'll see you guys next time with the
news.
Thank you. Bye, everybody.
Bye.